Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you for another hour. See you later, Maria. Thanks for coming in. Thank you very much. Oh, good, good. Maria's not going anywhere. Because Maria is the one who monitors the news for us. How important of a job is that? So thanks for being with us for another hour. Next segment, coming up after the next break, we're going to be talking to George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet, because I love talking about AI, because AI is a big idea, right? Artificial intelligence. What can it do? We hear a lot of the dangers. Are they real? Are they not real? We see basically every sci-fi trope now, every sci-fi type of series has some AI that goes out of control. Anyone who's ever seen Terminator knows how that works, right? But is that real? How is it being used today? What are the benefits of AI? We're going to talk about those kinds of things coming up in the next segment when we talk to George Rosenthal. But what I wanted to kind of end this segment on, because I got kind of rushed in the last segment, is this is when you're consuming news, when you turn on the television, when you listen to the top of the hour CBS News right here, or if you watch something on TV or hear pundits or analysts, what I want you to listen for, and this is what I go through whenever I'm consuming news, and that's really what it is, you're consuming a product of news. You have to listen at whether or not it sounds objective or biased. And sometimes that can be extremely difficult to discern. But for example, if you turn on Fox News, even though they are, Fox News is great about giving you information that you don't get elsewhere, right? If you watch a news segment, but if you watch or listen to any of the folks like Hannity or Laura Ingraham or Jesse Waters, they're putting out a specific agenda of information. That doesn't mean it's wrong, but you as a consumer of news need to know that. If you turn over on MSNBC, everything that you see on MSNBC is skewed towards one political view, and that's to the left. So how do you actually discern information and news when it comes particularly to these thorny legal issues? That's one of the reasons why right here on Wednesday nights on KMOX, when I go through analysis of the president, you know, this is a good way to show that the analysis that I give as I try the best of my ability to remove bias from it. So in that last segment, I gave you analysis showing that Trump does not enjoy immunity from prosecution. He should have to face those charges. However, at the same time, I laid out to you why I think under the standards set forth under Brandenburg versus Ohio by the U.S. Supreme Court, that he should not be found guilty of those charges regarding what he said and did on January 6th. So if I had a bias on this, I would have had both of those conclusions reach the same conclusion, or both of those ideas reach the same conclusion, but I didn't, because I analyze it based upon the facts, not based upon the person to whom it's being pointed to, in this instance, Donald Trump. So I personally try to take out him out of the equation and just put in my mind, John Doe. If John Doe were doing this, would John Doe be prosecuted, yes or no? Should John Doe enjoy this type of immunity, yes or no? And that's difficult to do, but I think in our society where we're bombarded with opinions, with ideas, with biases, that we need to be more mature consumers of the news. And so that's why I wanted to break that down for you. I already told you we're going to be talking to George Rosenthal, but after we finish talking to George, in the next segment after that, I want to talk about this manslaughter conviction of the woman in Michigan. She was convicted on 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. And what you're typically hearing from that analysis is, if you look at the emotional impact from the news story, it's that parents of kids who own guns should be prosecuted. And that's not the takeaway. That's not the legal standard. That's not what the legal standard should be. And in this instance, it's not what the legal standard is. And so even though under the facts in this case, I think there was probably sufficient evidence to convict the mom, probably not the father for reasons I'll get into in a few moments, but it's how this decision will be applied to future cases. The next, God forbid, mass shooting, the next time someone is shot, who's going to be held responsible? I'll break all of that down shortly after 9:30 this evening here on At Your Service. But coming up after the break, artificial intelligence, how does it work? Are we fearing something that could be great, or are we exposing ourselves to something that could be disastrous? More with George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet right after this on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. And as I mentioned right before the break, we're going to reach out to my good friend George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet to talk about all issues AI. Hey, George, great to talk to you again, my friend.
Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me on. And I do love the bumper music. Mr. Roboto is very appropriate.
You know what? Matt Pajeski is the board operator producer extraordinaire. So he always makes me laugh.
That was genius bumper music.
It is genius. And speaking of genius, you know, some people think that AI is all encompassing. It's going to take over the world. Other people look at AI and they use a term called singularity when AI can actually recreate itself, and that's going to be the end of the world. But as with most things, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And this is why I wanted to have you on, because let's talk about some of the benefits for just a moment. One of the things you and I were swapping emails this week was the amazing tech of Microsoft's Copilot that's within Office applications. Tell us, what is that?
It is so fascinating. I've just been using it for a week, and I can't stop using it. It is basically GPT, ChatGPT-4. So it's a large language model that is built into all of the Microsoft Office tools, meaning Outlook, Excel, Word, Microsoft Teams. When you're having chats with folks, you can ask it, hey, I need to know every single task that I've tasked this person with, and give me a list of everything they've tasked with, or give me a list of every file I've given this person so that I can go find things quickly. Imagine opening Word, and instead of having to think about how to start the document you're going to write, you just tell AI, here's the type of document I'd like to write, and it just does it. And then, of course, you go through and edit it, make it your own, change it around, but there's no more sitting down. I think the most positive thing about large language model AI is the savings of time, the efficiency that we're all going to have. It's fascinating. The ability to, so I did this, I was given a presentation to a large group of attorneys, and I said, I need a 10-slide PowerPoint presentation that talks about cybersecurity awareness training, and here are the main types of main issues I'd like to cover. It not only did it create the words, it actually went out, found images, created exclusive, neat, templated slides, and made the entire PowerPoint presentation for me in less than a minute.
Oh, my goodness. I've not done that.
The whole thing.
Well, I will tell you what I have done. Last year, I was on with Reardon, and I know you're a big fan over of 97.1 as well.
Absolutely.
And I was on with Reardon, and he wanted me to come on to represent him against Jane Duker in an argument about whether or not ketchup should be put on a hot dog instead of mustard. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, what am I supposed to say about that? I went to ChatGPT. I put in draft a legal argument in the form of a legal brief outlining the reasons why ketchup is better on hot dogs than mustard. And then poof, I got like this 5-point argument with citations, discussions of culinary diversity. And I'm like, well, I never would have thought of any of that. It was really amazing.
And for $20 a month, you get the magic of artificial intelligence helping you do things in your life. So, there's so many, obviously, so many scary things. Everybody says everybody's going to lose their job. Well, that's not going to happen for a long, long time in so many different industries. But right now, imagine you're being at work and able to use these tools. The things that you can get done now have just massively increased. by huge, huge percentages. The ability to have it in Outlook. When you get an email, you can ask Copilot to give you a recommended response. And then, of course, you make it your own. But the point is, I didn't have to sit there for the extra 10 minutes to answer that email. It gave me a recommended response to that email, and then I just tweaked a couple of sentences, and I'm done.
Well, I use Microsoft 365. My whole law firm does. I have not even played around with Copilot yet. So I promise you, I can't do it tomorrow because I'm going to be in here at Camo X a lot tomorrow. But Friday, I'm going to be playing with Copilot on Microsoft Outlook and to see how it works because it sounds fascinating.
It is absolutely. It changes everything about Microsoft tools that you ever thought was normal. I mean, everything from making a chart in Excel. You tell it the type of graph and chart you want to make, and it looks at all the data and makes the chart for you. I mean, it's unbelievable, the capabilities, and it's only going to get better every quarter. You know, they're constantly improving it. So, I mean, from a large language model perspective, meaning mostly English and working on, not English as a language, I'm saying mostly text, I just can't get enough of Copilot. Wow. I really can't.
Well, I will be. I will definitely be checking that out. We're talking to George Rosenthal. You know George. He's from ThrottleNet. He's literally the premier IT company here in St. Louis. And you're talking about some of these benefits. One of the things that I think is a benefit with caution is Elon Musk's Neuralink telepathy. Because when I first heard about it, and if folks haven't heard about it, it involves Elon Musk's company developing a chip that's implantable into the brain. And at least and you're going to know far more about it than I do, but one of the things that jumped out to me, George, that was beneficial about this is that it would literally allow people who use artificial legs, or artificial arms, artificial hands, to allow them to move like natural, real arms, legs, and hands.
Yes, it is absolutely fascinating. And we can get to the negative side at some point. I mean, obviously, everybody goes straight toward, the mark of the beast, and then this is the beginning of it all when you put a chip in your brain. But right now, you're talking about 1,024 electrodes with 64 threads, and a robot inserts it into the brain where motion is detected and taken care of. So imagine a quadriplegic, someone with ALS, someone that's blind. They can now answer their phone by thinking about it. They can dial a number on their phone by thinking about it. It ties directly to the device, directly to the computer. You can operate your television and not be able to. And obviously, this is with thought, because if you're a quadriplegic or you have ALS, you may not be able to touch anything or grab anything or move. But this is going to give so much freedom to those that don't have it right now. And the ability of just enhancing people's lives through this implant is going to be revolutionary. It's now been approved for FDA testing. One person has it. They said that he's recovered, doing very, very, very well, and is able to use the chip very well. What's really wild, though, is that you just think about, I want to answer the phone, and then your phone picks up. You're not having to type anything or touch anything. It's still mind-boggling to think about it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, part of me thinks we're all going to be 600 pounds like the people in WALL-E if we've got our, brain implant chips doing everything for us.
But
in this instance, though, what I'm drawn to is things like veterans who are injured. I mean, because battlefield medicine has gotten so much better, we have fewer casualties in warfare than we used to have, which is good.
Right.
But the downside is that there are more people, more veterans living with disabilities, because those people used to die. Now they live, but they still have the challenge of living day by day. And this type of technology could revolutionize veterans' medical care, whether it's amputees, whether it's quadriplegics, or whether it's people with PTSD or other mental disorders who come from that, who can't do this or that. This could literally be life-changing.
Absolutely. I mean, and think about having a robotic arm, and you get so used to it, you don't even think about it anymore. And now they have robotic arms with pressure points in the fingertips, and you'll be able to just think about picking up that egg, cracking it on the side of the pan without crushing it, and then be able to put that in the trash can and then flip the egg over with the robotic arm, because just by thinking about it. So in that way, it just, after time, it just becomes normal, as if it was your normal arm.
Right. And this stuff isn't science fiction in terms of 20, 30 years from now, we'll be doing this. You're talking about technology that's available right now.
Right now. It's being tested right now. The FDA gave full approval for testing, human testing. One person has it. And this is not something that Star Trek, you know, 150, 200, this is right now. Like, this is something that's happening now. The robotic arms with pressure points to be able to pick up things delicately or actually be able to hold on to something with force is happening right now. It's absolutely fascinating, the world we live in. It's changing every week. Artificial intelligence, no matter whether you think you're talking to artificial intelligence or not, chances are you probably are. A lot of times you'll be taking robocalls, or let's say you right now, if you go to Expedia and you want to plan a trip, you can spell out exactly what type of trip and how you'd like to take it. And Expedia's AI will walk you through all the different options that you have and plan the trip for you.
Oh,
and all built into their chatbot.
That is amazing. And
yeah,
there's something called the Turing test. Alan Turing developed this idea that testing the intelligence of computer systems, when you won't be able to tell the difference between talking to a computer or talking to a human, we're not quite there yet, are we?
We're not quite there, but I'll tell you, if you can have your voice cloned, it's not that hard to do. It literally, a couple hundred bucks, you give them at least 10 to 60 minutes of audio, and it sounds exactly like you. Now, the reason this is so awesome, it can be used for bad, of course. Of course it can. Yes, you can pick up the – I mean, it has been already.
Yeah, we've seen that in elections already this year.
And last year in 2023, the mom who picked up the phone and heard her daughter crying saying she was kidnapped and she needed money to be freed wasn't her. They had taken her voice and called her mom as if it was her. So, yes, there are some bad things, but imagine the good side of it is – being able to record your voice one time for 10, 15, 20 minutes, put it into AI, and then now make corporate training videos forever and ever. Be able to literally put your voice on an automated system, and now it's me talking to a prospect or a customer on a helpline that isn't me, but it sounds like me,
wow.
So it's a member of the company.
Wow.
That is absolutely fascinating.
That is fascinating. We're talking to George Rosenthal. He's literally the founder of ThrottleNet, and it's the premier IT company here in St. Louis. I'm glad he took out time to talk to us this evening. And we're going to take this segment a little bit long, George, because I want to keep talking to you about this.
Okay.
We've talked about some of the positive things, but some of the negative things that jump out at to me, and I'm not talking negative like speculative, oh my goodness, the machines are going to take over. That's speculative. But real life potential downsides to AI, of course,
yeah.
I have to talk about China and bad actors, whether it's China or North Korea or Iran. How can those bad actor companies, or even Russia in particular, how could they use AI to perhaps either further cyber theft in this country or further issues related to like hacking our infrastructure?
Yeah, you know, I love how you keep saying this is not something that's far off in the future or something speculative that we're making up. This is something we actually had a congressional hearing on last week about the CCP cyber threat to the American homeland. And, you know, the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, is sitting there saying, look, this is not a joke anymore. The FBI stopped one of the largest malware attacks on the country called Volt Typhoon. And it was attacking all of the infrastructure, the power grid, cell towers, water supplies. It was going after transportation. And, you know, he is making a very, very compelling point in this one thing. No longer do you have to fight a war with missiles and guns. Now you're fighting a war on a cyber level that affects every single one of us. And here's how. If they take out a cell tower, most people don't have a landline at home.
Right.
Now you have no 911 to call. Now you have no way to get the fire department or the police to your house because the cell tower's down. Now, you know, look in Florida. They attacked the water supply by putting an extra ingredient, extra amount of lye. And the reason they did that is they hacked into the water supply company because an employee clicked in a link in an email, then watched for 110 days until they hired a new employee. And when that new employee's shift was up, they changed the ingredients in the water supply. And thank goodness, a more experienced employee stepped in and stopped them from overputting lie into the system.
Yeah,
but
that could have done.
This is the kind of attacks that are happening now.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, that's happening. And I will tell you, George, this will show you just how much of a geek I truly am. I am a ham radio operator. I got my license. I've got several ham radios. So, yeah, when the communication grid goes down, at least I'll be able to talk to other hams because Listen, I've got it. The old technology will become extremely valuable when the communication system goes down.
Absolutely. I'm coming to your house.
Yeah, and I've also got a lot of deer in my neighborhood, so we got plenty to eat. So
there you go.
I refer to the communication. Yeah, I refer to the deer in my neighborhood as MREs. But
I love that.
They're going to be our emergency food rations. We're talking to George Rosenthal with ThrottleNet. And George, in addition to that, and I was following what Christopher Wray said last week, and it just reminded me that so often we have this sense of security because things work well, but that security could crumble very easily when it's all dependent on technology. And speaking of that security, you know, if you're Taylor Swift, you're a billionaire. You're dating Travis Kelce. You got more Grammys than anybody practically. But we saw about a week ago these AI pornographic images that were coming out of Taylor Swift. And that also, this whole idea of AI deepfakes, that's also a major problem, not just for Taylor Swift, but also for our court system, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, it is going to be a serious problem. And I mean, I can do it right now by going to several different sources, one of which is firefly.adobe.com. You can go to all types of different sources and you just type in what type of image you want to make and you can make it. You can also upload social media images of people and recreate them in any scenario you want to. And the scary thing is that obviously this happened to Taylor Swift, but this also happened to two high school girls in New Jersey. That some boys at the school wanted to get back at them for some reason, put them in these compromising pictures, and they got their images off of their social media accounts. Now, here's the problem. They look extremely real. So these poor girls now, these images are out there on the internet forever. So now when they go get a job, if somebody does a background search, they have to justify that that wasn't really them.
Yeah.
I mean, and not to mention when you if a crime occurs and they say, well, sir, this is you right here on the security camera and you're holding a gun. Well, he could have never held that gun because
right.
He could have been AI generated by someone else. So now it's your burden of proof that that picture is even real.
Yeah, I've been to lots of seminars on this, George, and that may be what you were talking about when you had the seminar with other lawyers. Next time you do a seminar for lawyers, please invite me. I want to go to that.
I will.
Because I would love to hear you talking to a room full of lawyers. But
I spoke in front of 300 at a security symposium, and they were absolutely fascinated. I mean, literally, I just pointed at someone and said, what's your favorite animal? They gave it to me. I said, what's your favorite food? They gave it to me. And I said, what's your favorite location? And right there live in front of 300 people, I typed in that whole text to image, and it created a dog eating pancakes at the Eiffel Tower, and perfect. It literally looked like the dog was sitting there eating pancakes. The fur looked real. The eyes looked real. So it is a spooky, spooky world we're going into, but I'll tell you what, the legal industry is going to explode because
yes. We're
going to need a lot more regulation, a lot more lawyers, and we're going to need AI to fight AI when it comes to knowing what video is real, what audio is real, when it comes to voices, and then what pictures are really real.
Well, you know, when you were in a room full of 300 attorneys, the most at-risk piece of property was your wallet. Just wanting to make sure that you're aware of that. Hey, George.
Yes.
You're going to use that line. You're going to use it and at least give me credit for it.
I will absolutely give you credit for that. I don't know if I had the nerve to tell them that.
Oh, sure. They'll love it. You know, they'll love it. Listen, lawyers love all jokes, particularly when it's about themselves. So they'll love it. Don't worry. But but if folks want more information about, because we're talking about these abstract ideas, benefits, detriments, how these things could be used for the benefit of all mankind and how they could be detrimental to our society. But when it gets down to day-to-day operations, ThrottleNet helps companies, businesses, and individuals dealing with IT issues. If folks need more info or want more info, how can they reach you at ThrottleNet?
Absolutely. Anything cybersecurity related, IT related, if you want to talk AI with me and go have a bite to eat, I'd love to do that as well. You can go to ThrottleNet.com/KMOX.
Very good. George, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang with us tonight and geek out about AI stuff.
Oh, Brad, it was my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity and love talking to you.
Good. Talk to you soon, my friend.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Hey, when we come back after this break, I teased it. I've had some people texting in. One person texted in and said, corporate training videos forever. Yippee. So that that's the best text of the evening. So after this break, though, before we run out of time this evening, I want to go through this manslaughter conviction because even though there's evidence to support this, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that the conviction is wrong, what I'm suggesting is that in the what's called the law of unintended consequences, this precedent could be used in the future in not so clear-cut situations. At your service, Brad Young here on Camo X. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Camo X. That's your service. Yeah, we're talking about not shooting the sheriff, but we're talking about that tragedy in Michigan where Ethan Crumbly shot four Oxford High School students in Michigan in 2021, in November 2021. It was a tragedy. And Ethan was convicted, tried and convicted as an adult, sentenced to life in prison. And he is undergoing punishment for that. But the question becomes, just this week, I think it was on Tuesday, in fact, it was yesterday, where the Michigan trial court, the jury, convicted the mom, Jennifer Crumbly, of involuntary, four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Each of those carry 15-year sentences, maximum. That means she could serve a maximum of 60 years in prison. And I want to state at the outset, because as I start to express some of my legal opinions about this decision, here's what I don't want you to take away from this. Brad thinks that they should not have been convicted, or the mom should not have been convicted. That is not what I'm saying. And that's not my takeaway. Because this forum, this is why I love talk radio. It allows us to dive deeper into an idea beyond simply the USA Today headline, mom convicted of involuntary manslaughter. That's true. Was there evidence to convict her? Absolutely. But the implications of that conviction go far beyond simply the fact of the conviction. And so some of the things as I've analyzed this and tried to digest what happened, I've had a lot of ideas that come to mind because, first of all, this is the first time in the history of our country, as far as anyone knows, I've researched it, I can't find another example, where a mom or parents, now the dad's trial is coming up next month, but where a parent has been criminally convicted of manslaughter in a situation where their child perpetrated the murders. First time it's ever happened. And in this case, as it proceeded to trial, the core part of the state's case, the prosecution, the core part of their case was this notion that Ethan, and Ethan Crumbly was the shooter. He was, I believe he was 17 at the time, that Ethan Crumbly had shown himself to be, the only phrase that comes to mind is emotionally disturbed. And instead of intervening, the mom, Jennifer Crumbly, left him, her son, to his own devices. In other words, I know you're emotionally disturbed, Ethan, but I'm just going to kind of let you deal with it yourself, and I'm not going to do anything. And there was a lot made. She was having an affair with at least one guy, maybe others, and the prosecution basically suggested that you were so interested in having these affairs that you weren't watching over Ethan. And again, that may or may not have contributed. But here's what really jumps out to me. Even though she was a flawed parent, no question. No question she was a flawed parent. The testimony at the trial, and I was keeping up with this trial as it was progressing. The testimony at the trial made it, shall I say, far from clear, really, that her son's murderous streak was predictable, much less that, and this is what the prosecution had to prove, that she, quote, willfully disregarded her son's murderous streak and could have prevented it via ordinary care. That's the standard that the prosecution had to meet. The jury said they met it. I agree with the jury and I won't disagree with their verdict. But here's some of the evidence that you didn't hear that came out at the trial. One of the witnesses at the trial, he was one of the counselors at the school. His name, or her name rather, was Christy Gibson Marshall. She was not only a counselor, but she was also the Oxford High School assistant principal. Here's what she said. She said, quote, "I didn't think he could possibly be the shooter." And I'm quoting, "It seemed odd that it would be him." And the counselor, the superintendent, Tim Throne, he echoed, quote, "At no time did counselors believe that this student, Ethan Crumbly, might harm others based on his behavior, his responses, and his demeanor, which at all times appeared calm," unquote. So if the mom was convicted of willfully ignoring, willfully disregarding her son's issues, and had she exercised, quote, "ordinary care," unquote, it would have prevented those murders. That's a very high bar. That's a very high standard of proof. Prosecutors obviously met that because the jury unanimously found her guilty of 4 counts of manslaughter. But here's my problem with that, because I'm looking at it as a chess game. Okay? The media loves to play checkers. They can only look at one move ahead. This is, she got convicted. It dealt with a gun. Fantastic. Anybody who has a gun in their house is a bad person. That's the message that we're receiving following this verdict. And I just think that's the wrong message. And again, I'm not suggesting that the mom should not have been prosecuted.
I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy.
Welcome back to Campbell X. That's your service. Yeah, we're talking about not shooting the sheriff, but we're talking about that tragedy in Michigan where Ethan Crumbly shot 4 Oxford High School students in Michigan in 2021, in November of 2021. It was a tragedy. And Ethan was convicted, tried and convicted as an adult, sentenced to life in prison. And he is undergoing punishment for that. But the question becomes, just this week, I think it was on Tuesday, in fact, it was yesterday, where the Michigan trial court, the jury, convicted the mom, Jennifer Crumbly, of 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. Each of those carry 15-year sentences, maximum. That means she could serve a maximum of 60 years in prison. And I want to state at the outset, because as I start to express some of my legal opinions about this decision, here's what I don't want you to take away from this. Brad thinks that they should not have been convicted, or the mom should not have been convicted. That is not what I'm saying. And that's not my takeaway. Because this forum, this is why I love talk radio. It allows us to dive deeper into an idea beyond simply the USA Today headline, mom convicted of involuntary manslaughter. That's true. Was there evidence to convict her? Absolutely. But the implications of that conviction go far beyond simply the fact of the conviction. And so some of the things, as I've analyzed this and tried to digest what happened, I've had a lot of ideas that come to mind. Because first of all, this is the first time in the history of our country, as far as anyone knows, I've researched it, I can't find another example, where a mom or parents, now the dad's trial is coming up next month, but where a parent has been criminally convicted of manslaughter in a situation where their child perpetrated the murders. First time it's ever happened. And in this case, as it proceeded to trial, the core part of the state's case, the prosecution, the core part of their case was this notion that Ethan Crumbly was the shooter. He was, I believe he was 17 at the time, that Ethan Crumbly had shown himself to be, the only phrase that comes to mind is emotionally disturbed. And instead of intervening, the mom, Jennifer Crumbly, left him, her son, to his own devices. In other words, I know you're emotionally disturbed, Ethan, but I'm just going to kind of let you deal with it yourself, and I'm not going to do anything. And there was a lot made. She was having an affair with at least one guy, maybe others, and the prosecution basically suggested that you were so interested in having these affairs that you weren't watching over Ethan. And again, that may or may not have contributed. But here's what really jumps out to me. Even though she was a flawed parent, no question. No question she was a flawed parent. The testimony at the trial, and I was keeping up with this trial as it was progressing. The testimony at the trial made it, shall I say, far from clear, really, that her son's murderous streak was predictable, much less that, and this is what the prosecution had to prove, that she, quote, willfully disregarded her son's murderous streak and could have prevented it via ordinary care. That's the standard that the prosecution had to meet. The jury said they met it. I agree with the jury, and I won't disagree with their verdict. But here's some of the evidence that you didn't hear that came out at the trial. One of the witnesses at the trial, he was one of the counselors at the school. His name, or her name rather, was Christy Gibson Marshall. She was not only a counselor, but she was also the Oxford High School assistant principal. Here's what she said. She said, quote, "I didn't think he could possibly be the shooter." And I'm quoting, "It seemed odd that it would be him." And the counselor, the superintendent, Tim Throne, he echoed, quote, "At no time did counselors believe that this student, Ethan Crumbley, might harm others based on his behavior, his responses, and his demeanor, which at all times appeared calm," unquote. So if the mom was convicted of willfully disregarding her son's issues, and had she exercised, quote, "ordinary care," unquote, it would have prevented those murders. That's a very high bar. That's a very high standard of proof. Prosecutors obviously met that because the jury unanimously found her guilty of 4 counts of manslaughter. But here's my problem with that, because I'm looking at it as a chess game. Okay? The media loves to play checkers. They can only look at one move ahead. This is, she got convicted. It dealt with a gun. Fantastic. Anybody who has a gun in their house is a bad person. That's the message that we're receiving following this verdict. And I just think that's the wrong message. And again, I'm not suggesting that the mom should not have been prosecuted. But what I am suggesting is that this will be a template. This will be a model for future prosecutions of any parent of a shooter, or really any spouse of a shooter. Think about that. Because here it's the parents, but can't you see the same argument being made against a spouse? If a man, and typically these are men who go out and shoot, can a wife now be prosecuted for involuntary manslaughter because she didn't stop her husband from going on a shooting rampage? The theory is exactly the same as what we say here. Now, you may say, hey, wait a minute, Brad, wait. You've gone too far. In this instance, it was the parents. The parents have control of their children. The parents should be monitoring their children. And that's not how spouses work. It's a completely different relationship. You're exactly right. But answer me this. How was Ethan Crumbley prosecuted? He was prosecuted as an adult. He didn't face juvenile charges. He was prosecuted as an adult. So if he was an adult, under our legal system, an adult is responsible for his or her actions. Not anyone else's, but yours as an adult. So if he was prosecuted as an adult, isn't it contradictory for the prosecution to say Ethan Crumbley acted as an adult and he's responsible for his own actions, while at the same time saying, no, he was a child and his parents are responsible for his actions? Don't those arguments seem contradictory? And they do. And that's why when I look at this, I say, if a husband goes out and shoots up someplace in Las Vegas like we had happen several years ago, can now the wife of that guy be prosecuted under the same theory? He's an adult, but she willfully disregarded that he was monitoring certain websites or that she willfully disregarded the fact that he had guns in the house. Because at the end of the day, that's the message. That's the emotional message that's being communicated here, which is if there's guns in your home, you should be prosecuted. And I completely disagree with that. We have a Second Amendment in this country that literally protects our right to bear arms. And yet, that's not the message that we're hearing. So again, hear me. I'm sorry to repeat myself. I'm not suggesting that she shouldn't have been prosecuted. What I'm suggesting is that the implications from this prosecution could go far beyond the mere facts that we saw in this particular case. Because think about this idea also. Don't you believe, if you're a rational human being, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal, don't you believe that people should be held responsible for their own actions? And I think the vast majority of people would say yes. And I'm going to tell you why that is right after this. We got to take a break here. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Work or play? KMOX is right there with you. We go where you go.
Welcome back to the last segment here on KMOX here this evening on At Your Service. And let me just put a fine point on what I was talking about in the last segment, and that is the Ethan Crumbley. He's the one who actually did the shooting, and now the mother, Jennifer Crumbley, has been convicted, and the father goes on trial on March 15. In every instance where, for example, a cop shoots a civilian, the cop is responsible. And yet when urban youths shoot each other, we're told that guns are responsible. Aren't we of the position here that people are responsible for their own actions? And if so, and if Ethan was tried as an adult, should his parents have also been prosecuted for a crime that he in fact committed, that he in fact was tried for, and that he in fact was convicted for? Those are just things for you to think about. Again, not arguing against it. Just pointing out elements that the mainstream media failed to do. Hey, coming up next, it's the best of Dave Glover. You can catch me tomorrow with Amy Mark Scores on the show on KMOX.
Work or play? KMOX is right there with you. We go where you go.
Welcome back to the last segment here on KMOX here this evening on At Your Service. And let me just put a fine point on what I was talking about in the last segment, and that is the Ethan Crumbley. He's the one who actually did the shooting, and now the mother, Jennifer Crumbley, has been convicted, and the father goes on trial on March 15. In every instance where, for example, a cop shoots a civilian, the cop is responsible. And yet when urban youths shoot each other, we're told that guns are responsible. Aren't we of the position here that people are responsible for their own actions? And if so, and if Ethan was tried as an adult, should his parents have also been prosecuted for a crime that he in fact committed, that he in fact was tried for, and that he in fact was convicted for? Those are just things for you to think about. Again, not arguing against it, just pointing out elements that the mainstream media failed to do. Hey, coming up next, it's the best of Dave Glover. You can catch me tomorrow with Amy Mark Scores on the show on KMOX.